Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Mendel Rivers to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner. The revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on reports from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he had been saving for just the right occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so goddamn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally screwed Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news, and no pictures of Harry Arm Women Liberationists and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Keyes, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, or Engelbert Humperdinck. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised. Will not be televised. Not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Smart growth. Smart code. Sustainable development. We hear these terms every day. But what do they mean, and how will they change our lives? I'm Alexandra Swan, and in this short video presentation, you'll find out exactly what smart growth means to you. The term sustainable development was coined in 1987 in a report called Our Common Future, produced by the United Nations Commission on the Environment and Development. The commission was chaired by Gro Harlem Brundtland, former Prime Minister of Norway, former head of the World Health Organization, and Vice President of the International Socialists. Brundtland's findings led to the United Nations Earth Summit, which created Agenda 21. Agenda 21 calls for a profound reorientation of all human society, unlike anything the world has ever experienced, a major shift in the priorities of both governments and individuals, and an unprecedented redeployment of human and financial resources. This shift will demand a concern for the environmental consequences of every human action be integrated into individual and collective decision-making at every level. Although Agenda 21 was too radical to ever be ratified by the U.S. Senate, it was signed by President George H.W. Bush as a soft treaty, and every U.S. president since 1992 has reaffirmed its goals. Agenda 21 has three parts: economic equality, or redistribution of wealth, not only within, but also among nations, social justice, and environmentalism. Agenda 21 calls for the abolition of private property and free enterprise in favor of communal ownership and central planning. In 1995, Bill Clinton created the President's Council on Sustainability. Gary Lawrence, a Seattle planner and advisor to the Clinton Gore Council on Sustainable Development, explained the goal of the council. He said, in some cases, local Agenda 21 is seen as an attack on the power of the nation state. So we will call our process something else, such as comprehensive planning, growth management, or smart growth.
Those are the terms by which we know Agenda 21 today. For the next 13 years, the goals of Agenda 21 advanced slowly throughout the U.S., mainly in corporate policy decisions and on a local level through metropolitan planning. Cities worldwide and throughout the United States joined ICLEI, a UN-accredited non-governmental organization which encourages cities to develop smart growth. But progress was slow because Americans traditionally prefer single-family homes and cars to the densely packed urban housing and public transportation that smart growth demands. But then something happened. The housing market crash of 2007 and 2008 opened the door for the beginning of the radical restructuring of our society needed to achieve Agenda 21. President Obama, then candidate Obama, gave us a glimpse of this in 2008 in his campaign speech in Roseburg, Oregon.
We can drive our SUV and, you know, eat as much as we want and keep our homes on, you know, 72 degrees at all times, and whether we're living in the desert or we're living in the tundra, and then just expect that every other country is going to say, okay, you know, you guys go ahead and keep on using 25% of the world's energy, even though you only account for 3% of the population, and we'll be fine. Don't worry about us.
Since 2008, our government has been actively implementing Agenda 21, not just on a local level, but on a national one. Now, in his second term, President Obama is using every resource at his disposal. Federal grants to entice cities to embrace sustainability and federal agencies like HUD and the EPA to force Agenda 21 on all communities, whether they want it or not.
The goals of Agenda 21 are not new. They're old-style Marxism repackaged, and they're marching across virtually every community in this country almost completely unchecked. That's why it's so important to find out what's going on in your community. I will be posting a series of short video blogs to show you how Agenda 21 works and how it's infiltrating communities. Watch them. Share them with your friends. Find out about the UN companion initiatives that accompany Agenda 21. And then, when ICLEI comes to your town, you'll have the tools that you need to stand up with your fellow citizens and just say no.
Caleb Pereira, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, a Florida man says he felt like he was on the wrong end of a firing squad. His name, Roy Middleton, and he's still trying to figure out why police started shooting when he was in his car, unarmed, in his own driveway. In a moment, we'll talk with Pensacola Sheriff David Morgan, whose officers were involved. But first, Nick Valencia will bring you up to date on the story, tell you everything you need to know. Good morning, Nick.
Where Roy Middleton was shot by police. He's still in the hospital recovering. His family tells us that he's expected to be out soon. But for now, Middleton is just trying to make sense of what happened.
Right here. There's a big slug right here.
An unarmed man getting out of his own car, shot multiple times by police.
See, he was in the car like this. And he said that when they told him that, he thought it was our neighbor next door playing with him because they usually do that. But he said when they shine the light, he said he went to put up his hand and turn around, and that's when the bullet started.
Ciola Walker's 60-year-old son, Roy Middleton, came under fire while he stood in his Pensacola, Florida driveway, mistaken as a burglary suspect in the wee hours of the morning.
I complied with the order, and they opened fire on me, and they didn't stop, I guess, until they ran out of ammunition.
Middleton says he was just looking for a cigarette in his car at 2:30 in the morning. Escambia County deputies, responding to a 911 call from a concerned neighbor, say it was dark, and Middleton refused to obey their commands. Then they say he lunged at them with a shiny object. Sheriff's deputies fired 15 shots at Middleton, two hitting him. He's now recovering in the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries.
The whole hip bone is blown out, and I have metal rods in it.
Critics to the shooting don't buy it and say deputies need to be better trained.
I think what the community must understand is that we have a group of deputies that's trying to do their job, but it's a little difficult for them to do their job because they're not trained. Why would you shoot someone that's not shooting at you?
Now, whether Middleton was complying or the deputies were acting appropriately, that will be determined in the coming weeks. The sheriff here has handed the case, the investigation, over to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and the state attorney. They'll have to determine if any laws were broken. Chris?
All right, thanks, Nick. Sheriff David Morgan joins us now. Sheriff, thank you very much for taking the opportunity to deal with these questions. You know how important this situation is because it looks bad, Sheriff. You got a 60-year-old man at his own house in his own driveway, and he winds up getting shot at 15 times by two officers. You say it was justifiable. How?
Well, again, our officers, Mr. Cuomo, they followed standard protocol, and again, you know, we're getting the Monday morning quarterbacking in the after actions, comments basically of neighbors who are getting their information from other neighbors and sometimes getting second and third hand information from even family members. The officers responded to a 911 call, which was a vehicle theft in progress, 2:30 in the morning. Again, you know, some of the statements vary, and the spontaneous utterances that Mr. Middleton made, of course, are changing now. But they responded again early in the morning. We had an eyewitness next door who was on the cell phone during the entire time. He only entered his house once the gunshot started. He observed exactly what the deputies did. All of the witness statements match up with what the deputies' actions were. So right now we're comfortable from a training perspective that our officers, in fact, did follow standard protocols. I believe you're an attorney. You know, the standard that we use and we train to is a landmark U.S. Supreme Court case. It's, you know, Graham versus Connors, which is the reasonableness test of how officers react to these unknown situations. The officers, by the way, were illuminated by streetlights. And when we asked the witness, was he aware that they were deputies, he said yes, he could tell by the patches on their sleeves.
Right. What we're leaving out of here, though, Sheriff, is what could this 60-year-old unarmed man have done that would make the officers feel they needed to shoot at him 15 times?
He did not comply, is the bottom line. The witness statements go as such. When they first directed the individual to exit the car, he first stuck one hand, his left hand, out the driver's window, then retrieved his hand. It looked as though he was going into the console area of the car. Then he opened the door, put one leg and one arm outside the door, lunged back again inside the car as the deputies were telling him to, again, step out of the car, let us see your hands. And then when he got up out of the car, he made a lunging movement out of the car. And when he spun around, his hands were not up. He raised one hand, which had a metallic object in it. And it was at that point that the officers began to fire.
Even if everything you're saying or that your officers are saying is true, 15 times at a 60-year-old unarmed man, why?
Well, again, Chris, we didn't know that he was unarmed, number one. He had an object in his hand, which led the officers to believe that he had some sort of weapon. And that also is standard protocol. When an officer employs deadly force, your training tells you to continue to fire until the suspect is secured because you've made that decision at that point that your life or the life of someone else is in danger, and so that's not out of the ordinary.
The officers involved were yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, Chris, I might also point out that just less than 5 days prior to that, you know, people are making comments about the officers' training. They had just completed, which is a routine thing in our training at the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, what's referred to as our active shooter program, which is an interactive program. It's computer-driven, where you role-play, and officers are trained to defuse situations and not allow it to escalate again to a shooting situation. And that was just 5 days prior to this case.
But, Sheriff, doesn't something about this situation give you pause for concern when your officers wind up shooting at a guy 15 times? It's like the only thing that went in his favor is that your sheriffs were a bad shot, so they only hit him once with 15 rounds. Otherwise, it seems like that's all he had going for him here, and you seem completely kind of unmoved by the circumstances. They're very troubling.
Well, again, Chris, we're always, I mean, I've described this to a lot of folks as a tragedy. Anytime an officer has to employ the use of deadly force in any situation, it's a tragedy. And it's a tragedy anytime someone is hit by any rounds. Again, the number of rounds expended, no, that's not out of the ordinary. I think it's only out of the ordinary of those folks who are not engaged in law enforcement. This is all too common an occurrence. We live in a very violent society. In Escambia County, unfortunately, we have the highest rate of incarceration out of 67 counties, and we have the eighth highest crime rate for a county that, again, is not the largest county in Florida. So our officers are responding to very dangerous situations. This was 2:30 in the morning.
Right.
Again, we had a subject who was not compliant. So, you know, again, I'm not really sure how the officers could have reacted differently in this situation. But again,
well,
we don't conduct the investigation.
I got you. First of all, and that's a very strong move, you handling it over to the state authorities so that they can have an independent eye on it. But I got to give you one more chance at this, Sheriff. People look at this situation, and the report was wrong. It was not a burglary. This is the man's house. He was unarmed. You say that your deputies say he didn't comply. Another witness says he did comply. He says he complied. So we don't know really what happened there, although it is a little unreasonable to assume a man would not comply while on his own property doing nothing wrong. But do you understand why it will give people such concerns about what happens when white police officers encounter black men down in your county?
Well, again, and now we're injecting race into the situation, which, you know, compounds the situation. And again, the eyewitness that you're referring to, we took a statement from this gentleman. He was one of the neighbors of Mr. Middleton. His statement has changed. You know, we've got a sworn statement from this individual, and the statement that we received from him said that, you know, from his vantage point, he could hear the officers directing Mr. Middleton. He, you know, confirmed basically all the things that our officers said. And so now on camera, he's changing it. You know, he wasn't belligerent. From what he could tell, he was complying. So again, we've got a variance there. You know, are we concerned? Well, again, Chris, I mean, that's a little bit of a ridiculous statement, if I may say so. Anytime a citizen is harmed, you know, we're concerned. And in this case, Gord, when you inject race into it, I mean, it, you know, it's inflammatory.
Well, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to it because it's not me who's introducing you to what people's concerns are about this situation. That's why I'm putting it out there. This is the way it sizes up to people. That's why I appreciate you coming on to explain it from your perspective. Hopefully,
well, Chris, could I put this somewhat in balance?
Sure.
Here's why we're concerned about this as a community and as a nation. Approximately 4 months ago in Escambia County, you know, there were two black males and a black female who bludgeoned a white female to death with a ball-peen hammer and a crowbar. And there was no public outrage. There was no uprising in this. Approximately a month and a half ago, a black male shot a white male unarmed on Pensacola Beach, you know, in the face and in the chest. There was no public outcry to this. So again, now that law enforcement's involved in this, you know, I'm very concerned about this from a race relations perspective as much as anything, because what it tells me is we haven't bridged the gap as much as, unfortunately, I thought that we had.
I think it's a great point to make, Sheriff. I appreciate making it out on our show, and I appreciate you taking the opportunity. Thanks for being with us today.
Yes, sir.
Kate?
Coming up next on New Day.
Well, that tells me that's a bunch of bullshit. That's what that is. Hey, welcome to Crazy Nation Radio. This is your host, Ron Reck, and I'm just flipping some clips up tonight because I ain't got no callers, so I'm just going to ride with the flow. All right, so here we go. Hang tight. Let's rock it.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Gregory Manorino, Hawaii Today. It is Thursday, July 10th, 2014. All right, people. This video, today's video, I think is very, very important, maybe one of the most important that I've done yet, possibly. Let me shed a little light onto an event which occurred that people don't understand the gravity of, I believe, by and large. The vast majority of the people have no conception about what is happening right under their noses. I'm hearing echoes in many, many ways of the Bear Stearns moment and the Lehman Brothers moment, and we're going to talk about that. So what happened? Today, we found out that Portugal's largest bank, Banco Santo, apparently is going to be defaulting on a debt payment. This is tremendous. I mean, it's absolutely huge, and it plays into something I've been talking about, people, since day one. That is this debt bubble, the greatest threat to humankind, bar none, greater than ISIS, greater than Al-Qaeda, greater than a nuclear exchange, because this debt bubble issue is encompassing the world. Now, let me elaborate a little further here. The issue with regarding the European banks actually never went away here. We all understand how several years ago we were hearing about the European debt crisis, the European debt crisis, the European debt crisis, and how did they attempt to fix the European debt crisis? They attempted to fix, pay attention now seriously, and see if this makes sense to you. They attempted to fix a debt problem by adding monumentally more debt on top of a debt issue. Does it surprise even one of you out there that they were not able to solve a debt problem by adding more debt to it? If you have even one functioning brain cell, even a half of one functioning brain cell, you understand that this is an impossibility. You cannot solve a debt problem by adding more debt to it. And I've been going over, and I've repeated this multiple times here, how the crash of 2008 was the party over moment for the global financial system. And this here, What we're in right now is nothing but a terminal side effect. It's a fact, okay? They can stimulate, they can print, they can add debt onto debt problems to try to solve a debt problem, and it won't work. The system is not only terminal, but it's malignant. Okay. The issue here is this. So we understand now that Portugal's largest bank seems to be insolvent. Now, what people need to understand here is this is not just a one-off. Despite what you might have heard today on some of the financial channels, they're like, oh, this is just a one-off. It cannot be a one-off, and let me explain to you why. All of these banks here, all of the European banks, the banks here in the United States, and the banks globally are interconnected. And the debt that is owed by any one particular bank is insured through a mechanism called a credit default swap by another entity. Okay, so to put this into a simple perspective, if in fact this bank here, Portugal's largest bank, if they do default on that debt is now the responsibility of another entity through this mechanism of a credit default swap. Does this sound familiar to any of you out there who were paying attention to what was going on during the crash of 2008, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, AIG? You remember all this? It sounds exactly the same, doesn't it? Again, what this can cause and has the potential to do, again, is create a cascade of events. Because again, all of these institutions are connected. And the other issue, which has to be understood, why this has the potential to make Lehman Brothers look like child's play, is all of these institutions have been forced in many, many ways by central banks to take on debt that is unimaginable, that again, to hyperinflate the system. So we have a much greater debt problem than that can possibly imagine that happened in 2008. Here in the United States, we have more than doubled our sovereign debt. We all understand that since that time. Doesn't that sound kind of scary to you? All of the nations of the world are in the same boat. All of the banking system, the whole entire toxic, malignant, terminal banking system is in dire straits right now, people. And I think they're going to try to downplay this issue here. But it's so monumental and so huge that you've got to get your head around this. And this should now be reinforcing to you that our policymakers, Mario Draghi, Ben Bernanke before Jenny Yellen, they have no idea of what they're doing here. All they know is they need to try to keep it propped up. And it's becoming critical at this particular point here. Again, all we've heard about was the European debt crisis. It's fixed now. Really? Well, if that were the case, why would Portugal's largest bank be defaulting on a debt obligation? Sounds interesting, doesn't it? Again, this has the potential to create a chain reaction, which will eventually, and there's no way out, engulf the entire world, people. And it's going to affect you directly here. At this particular point, I think that we still have some time here. And again, I want to talk about this as I go forward here. But we are very close to this moment here. The European Central Bank several weeks ago went negative interest rates. They're charging people to keep their cash in these banks. Portugal's largest bank now defaulting on debt. This cannot be a one-off again. So when you hear an individual on the financial channel saying something like that, I forgot who it was, but someone actually said that, they have no idea of how the banking system works here. And if you probably said to this individual, what's a credit default swap? They would be like, I have no idea. Obviously, they don't know. Or they're trying to sell you something. They cannot let people understand the gravity of this. This moment here, this may be Europe's Lehman Brothers moment by multiple fold larger. Again, why? The debt issue is multiple fold larger now. So again, all they have done, all the world central banks have done, in collusion with our policymakers, is created a financial monster that is going to engulf the entire world. And it's the debt bubble, people. It's the debt bubble that they've hyperinflated here. There's no way out of what is coming. Now, my advice is simply this. Understand, if these banks do start to have default and credit default swaps start to trigger down the line here. The banks will go into survival mode. That means you will not have access to whatever cash that you think you have in the bank. I want to talk about that too. There will be bank holidays. The banks will not allow themselves to fail. They will put this on your back. And there are many, many ways to actually work, make this work for you people. And this is what I'm all about, what I've been talking about for the longest time here. What you need to do at this particular point before this spreads and gets worse, which I think it will, is get your cash out of these banks. And once you get your cash out of these banks here, you need to use that cash to bet against the malignant financial system. It's that simple. How do you bet against the malignant terminal financial system? You hold hard assets. Look at what's been happening to gold and silver lately. As this system collapses, and it will, there's no way out of it. Again, our policymakers are powerless to stop this. Let me put another perspective on this for you. Let's say we get this issue with debt, the banks here, they can't repay their debts. This starts to start this cascade of events, credit default swaps, this spreads across the entire financial banking system because they're all connected. Your bank, I am sure, is going to be affected by this. I don't care where it is in the world. As this happens, what is the Federal Reserve or any world central bank going to do? Print cash out of thin air? Try to stave off a debt problem by adding more debt? It doesn't work. It's already been proven not to work. So this will dilute the currency to almost or near worthlessness. So you need to be betting against that debt, people. And I've been screaming from rooftops about this for years now. This is why you need to hold gold and silver. If you do not hold gold and silver right now, platinum, palladium as well, more specifically silver, because I think it's the most undervalued asset in the history of the world, then you just simply don't get it. And you've been indoctrinated into the belief that everything is going to be okay here. Nothing could be further from the truth here. Again, if you do not hold hard assets in your portfolio or have no access to it, you can't imagine the trouble that you have the possibility of facing as the system comes down. So it's just, I cannot stress this enough, how this incident here with this bank in Portugal, the largest bank in Portugal, has the potential, I'm not saying it will 100% at this time, has the potential to start a cascade of events that will wipe out the financial system as we know it, because all of these banks are interconnected. The debt problem has ballooned multiple fold, and we have an issue here with credit default swaps. Okay, no bailout like they did with AIG will stave this one off, people. Let me just say something else. We heard today, and I didn't really give it almost any attention. We got apparently a good jobs report today. What does this matter in the grand scheme of things when the entire system is malignant? A word that I've been using a lot through this video, but that's a fact. It is a malignant system that is a dead man walking. You need to protect yourself. Start withdrawing your cash from these banks. Let me go over that real quick. Whatever cash that you think you have in the bank does not exist. Look up a fractional reserve system. All the banks do this, people. It's incredible. Let's say you're lucky enough to deposit $10,000 in the bank. The bank is only required to keep 10% of it. The rest of it's gone. So that $10,000, in this case, that you think you have is only $1,000. This is why banks fear these bankrupts. The whole system is based upon a Ponzi scheme. And I'm not just making this up. Look it up. Fractional reserve system. And the world central banks are the biggest offenders of this, bar none. They print this cash out of thin air to do whatever they want with it. Once the cash leaves their computer screen or wherever it goes, it starts to acquire interest. Interest that they pay themselves by printing more cash out of thin air. It's a terminal system. It can't work. I've been over this many, many times. Once we left the gold standard, we began a terminal decline. We've seen what's happened to the value of the currency. The U.S. dollar has lost 90% or better of its value. And again, we're very close at this particular point to the end of the system. The system is dying. And you need to be aware of what you need to do, people, in this particular instance. Now, with that said, I've gone over the fact a million times already that they're going to do whatever they can and things we haven't thought of yet to prop the system up. And that may be bank holidays, not allowing you access to your cash. But I still believe, at least today, at this moment, that there's some upside here to the equity markets. So I'm taking advantage of that. Today's pullback, the Dow was down 180 points at one point on this news. All the global markets get punished because of it. One of my trades today did very, very well. I hope you got yourself involved in it. It was posted right on my site, traderschoice.net, and that was Verizon. I pulled a 4% profit out of that while people got killed in this market today, and I reallocated those funds in some new long positions. I'm going to be watching these like a hawk. All right, check my site, traderschoice.net. You can see where I'm at. People, we need to understand that this really has the possibility of turning into an event that's going to make Lehman Brothers look like a walk in the park, because all the banks are insolvent. All of the banks are holding debt they can never possibly pay back. And all of these banks are insuring their debt through the mechanism of a credit default swap. And if the banks who are insuring these, the debt can't pay back, well, what do you think is going to happen? Boom, 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 chain of events. Wipe out the financial system on a global level, which is going to happen. Whether it happens today, tomorrow, next week, next month, who knows? It's going to happen. You need to protect yourself. You need to start taking cash out of the banks. Look up fractional reserve banking. Understand why banks will go into survival mode if people start to withdraw their cash. Get yours out first. Convert that into hard assets, people. Bet against the debt. You bet directly against the debt by holding hard assets. I can't stress this enough. And I've been going over this for years. And honestly, again, if you do not hold gold or you do not hold silver, more specifically right now in this environment, you, first of all, you're way behind the curve here. And two, you've got to get up to speed. And you have to understand that our policymakers, in collusion with the world central banks, the Wall Street banks, the global banks, are not on your side. And when they go into survival mode, you will not have access to whatever cash you think you might have in the bank. Start to use this to your advantage. Take advantage of what I am telling you and share this video. Spread this around. Let's get the word out, people. Because, again, I think we're very close, very, very close now to seeing a major event unfold. And we need to take advantage of this and protect ourselves from every way possible. That's it, people. I'm going to end this video getting awfully long-winded. Please share this video. I'm urging you to do that. Give me a thumbs up if you think it's important. And I'll see you all tomorrow. Take care.